From sea to shining sea, throughout the solar system, and extending to interstellar regions beyond, this is the Kevin Smith Show.
Comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors.
Hi, folks, and welcome to the Kevin Smith Show, whoever you are, and wherever you happen to be, all around this beautiful place we call Earth. Thank you for being here at the Kevin Smith Show. I know there are a million other ways you could be spending your Tuesday evening or morning or afternoon or whatever it is in your part of the planet. I know that there's a million other things you could be doing, but you decided to be here, and I appreciate that. I want you to know that I do. I'm here because you matter and because you have a right to know. Here at the Kevin Smith Show, every single show we try to bring you information that you're probably not going to get out there in mainstream media. Sometimes they report on things that we report on, but usually not, and usually if they do, they do it kind of ridiculously. But this show is about bringing you the information because you have a right to know. I want to remind everybody about the K-Files. Now, I've been doing the show since the year 2000, and as a matter of fact, on the 11th of May, we will celebrate the 13th anniversary, meaning we will then start our 14th year of broadcasting. I started publishing the K-Files just 2 or 3 weeks after I started the broadcast. And for as long as I can remember, almost every show I try to remember to talk about the K-Files, our newsletter. And for 13 years, going on 14 years, I've gotten email from people from time to time where they say, "Why do you have to say that every night? I get tired of hearing that." Well, there was a night, if you're one of those people, there was a night when it was your first time to tune into the Kevin Smith Show. Everybody else that had been tuned in for years had all heard about and knew about, and a bunch of them were subscribed to the K-Files. But you heard about it that first night when you tuned in. That's why. Because every single night we have new people that join us and listen, and they don't know about it. So let me tell you, we publish a newsletter. It is called The K-Files, and The K-Files is absolutely free. It comes out twice each month. Every other week, we send it out. Well, so that means, I guess, maybe some months it might come out three times. It could work out that way. But every other week, it comes out. And it's a really good publication. It's got a lot of good information in it. And I want you to be getting it. Now, it's free. All you have to do to get it is get over to my website and click where it says K-Files. Because if you do that, if you click where it says K-Files, you can then subscribe. Now, you're going to get automatically an email, and that email has a link in it that you have to click in order to activate your subscription. But if you do click it and activate your subscription, you'll start getting the K-Files. We'll be back right after this break. All of the music used here at the Kevin Smith Show is from independent artists. Most of it from independent artists at musicalley.com. Go over to musicalley.com. Check out thousands of artists and thousands of great independent tunes. Musicalley.com. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show, and my guest this evening, who will join us in just a moment, is Robert McDonald. And before we bring him on, though, he's online patiently waiting, and I appreciate that. Before we bring him on, a couple of things real quick. I've been trying to keep you updated on the condition of John Vasquez. And, you know, John is the one who wrote the book about, I think it's even called Battle at Fort Benning. And he says that there was a UFO battle at Fort Benning in 1977. And he says he was there and he was injured in that battle. and that there were a lot of people there, and he was trying to, you know, he spent years trying to get people to come forward and talk about it. John had a stroke, as I reported to you, about 2 weeks ago, I think, and it was reported to me that he was in a coma and not responsive. I got an update today. I think it was actually sent to me late yesterday, but I read it today, that he is still in a coma and not responsive. So you'll want to send your best energies and prayers his direction. John Vasquez. Also, the Kevin Smith Show is listener supported. I say it every night. And I know there are people who think, well, you know, why is he always begging for money? I'm not. I'm telling you that if we can't pay the bills, we won't be here. And you who listen and enjoy our listeners, this is listener supported. If you think we should be here, click the donate button. If you don't, then we'll just accept whatever comes. But we need your support. All right. Now, Robert McDonald is someone who has been with us on the show before. And I think a lot of you remember Robert McDonald. And he is the captain of the ship made out of ice cream sticks. And I'm sure you remember all of that. So, Robert, welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show.
Well, it's good to be back, Kevin. How you been?
Very, very good.
Your music's getting popular over here.
Oh, is it?
It is.
Really? In the Netherlands?
Yeah, I was a bit surprised and stunned and shocked.
Yeah?
I didn't know you sang. This is pretty good.
Well, I don't sing. I do play guitar.
Okay. And you do it quite well, then.
Well, thank you. But the last time you were here, shortly after that, I just want to deal with this for a moment, and then I want us to move on. Shortly after that, you came under a pretty severe attack. And there were some really nasty things that were written about you and posted on the internet. And my response was, well, let's wait and see. Let's see, you know, if he runs, then it must be true. If he stands, then perhaps it's not true. And from what I've noticed, you stood, and I haven't noticed a bunch of people, you know, posting corroborative articles corroborating the attacks.
Actually, nobody has. Absolutely nobody. She made all these claims that these people said this about me. These people said that about me. These people witnessed it and this and that. But not one of them had anything to say in this. And the person, without saying a whole lot about this subject, the person who did attack me over the net is about to learn there is no freedom of speech on the internet, literally, and they're about to find their bacon inside of a courtroom real quick.
Well,
I have not backed off, back down at all. There's more evidence collaborating what took place with me than they have that it didn't. So,
well, actually, you know, there's no total freedom of speech anywhere. I mean, there is freedom of speech, but you're not free to tell things that aren't true about people and companies and, you know. Because if you do that and it causes them damage or is intended to or can be foreseen to possibly cause them damage, that is something we call slander and libel. And that's always illegal.
Absolutely. And this particular individual is going to pay dearly for that slander. And this person is a female. She's not safe over in Denmark. And what she did was nothing more than just horrible, horrible slander. And there was nothing. It was based on, well, nothing. In fact, she said, what was one of her wild claims, this person?
Well, we don't need to get into that. But, I mean, I just wanted to bring that up because I know that our listeners were aware of it. And so I wanted our listeners to hear you, you know, at least address what the situation is. But you went right on. In fact, this was right at the beginning of you starting something called Paranormal 360.
Exactly. Paranormal 360 was a Facebook media group which was meant to look at everything from ghosts to any reports. Basically, my team are in right now 33 countries, and we chase down rumors, stories, rumors of what's going on here and there. For example, the Baltic Sea UFO, if you remember that, releasing that story. We actually go to these locations and track them down. And we also have a sister group, which is becoming a TV show here shortly, called the Ghost Ship Hunters, very famous Facebook group page, along with Paranormal 360. The Ghost Ship Hunters, we work side by side. If we need to go into the ocean, that's what we do. We still have the world's only paranormal platform at sea registered. So that's what I do, captain my boat.
What happened to the boat that was basically destroyed?
The ice lolly boat, well, fell directly in half, just as if it was cut by a knife. Just the prettiest separation you've ever seen in your life, considering how thick it was. And it had traveled almost 33,000 miles, nautical miles, at sea, delivering toys to children. Of course, I released the Baltic, I was the first person to release the story of the Baltic Sea object. I'm refusing to call it a UFO even now, but the Baltic Sea object. And then I went under numerous threats, as you remember that, Kevin, on your show. And, well, we went to move the ship out of the water to from the lake of where it was staying and place it into the North Sea to take off. And the ship, literally on lifting, fell in half. It had been lifted several hundred times before without incident. And
I saw the pictures of that. Yeah, you posted the pictures of that.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I don't have a lot to say about that. Gone is gone. Goodbye. The kids and me are planning to build another ship here in the future, the little kids. You know, the big lolly boat was built of 15 million ice cream sticks for your listeners, and it was made from 5 tons of glue, 15 million ice cream sticks, 45-foot ocean-going boat. And, yeah, it was a lot of fun, and we're actually planning another ship.
Just as a side note, I watched a documentary last night of a team that discovered and then used electronic equipment, you know, submerged various types of electronic equipment, to explore a Dutch trading vessel that is sitting in 400 feet of water in the Baltic. And is sitting upright, and you know, it's not laid over, it's sitting upright,
but in almost perfect condition. That's right.
Yeah. And they were able to get enough photographs and enough electronic images, you know, from soundings and you know, sonar scans and all of that. They were able to put it all together and do a reconstruction of what the ship would have looked like. And it's pretty magnificent. It really was. It was really, really cool. All right, you've got something else going on now, and that's what I want us to talk about here tonight. We can talk about some other things. But you've got something you're calling the Normandy Beach Adventure. And
exactly.
Yeah. Now, the name of that, I would think, you know, most people hear about Normandy Beach, and they don't think adventure. They think death, destruction, really, really, really bad, bad day in the history of the planet in terms of the loss of life. But you're calling this the Normandy Beach Adventure. So what are we talking about?
What we're talking about is on the 4th, 5th, and 6th. The 6th, of course, being D-Day itself, the anniversary. Right. We are planning something that has absolutely never been done. A candlelight vigil on the ocean, on the beaches of D-Day, on the D-Day coast, and the giant five-story tall bunkers built by the Nazis. We were planning a spirit or ghost hunt, if you will, through the Paranormal Knights of Scotland, and groups from all over the world are coming to this Adelaide, France. They're coming to take part in this adventure. And I say adventure because we have 250 bunkers that have never been explored. There's never been, there's lots and lots and lots of paranormal activity.
Now, when you say they've never been explored, you mean since the war, nobody's been in them?
No,
no one? Nobody's been in those bunkers.
Nope. The government of France had basically sealed them off from the public. Mm-hmm. Many of these bunkers, there's a few to the public, but most all the bunkers were sealed off from the public for protection reasons or more for, I don't know why they sealed them off, actually, Kevin. Memory?
Well, you know, I would think in the beginning, the reason would be because there could be booby traps and landmines and things like that around them.
Well, they still explode in France all the time, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but they had not too so long ago around these bunkers. Now, these are called super bunkers. And Bertha is a rail gun. That's a super gun, about 100-foot-long gun, one of the largest on Earth that sits on the rail carriage. It's longer than the rail carriage itself. These super bunkers, they call them, held these guns. Mm-hmm. And they would actually roll in on a rail and aim these cannons, and they could actually hit Dover from France, hit London from France. I mean, these guns were just being put into place when the D-Day happened, when D-Day took place. So they didn't have a chance to actually use the guns. They had never had the opportunity, which was just lucky.
That is quite a range.
Was just luck from the Allies.
That's quite a range to be able, from Normandy, to hit London. I mean, you're talking, what, 80 miles?
Yep. The shells weighed almost 1 ton each. They had to be brought in by crane and lifted into the gun, literally by a crane, and 6 men would have to load 1 shell. These were absolutely, well, have you ever seen the film Guns of Navarone?
Yeah.
This is the same idea, but on land, these mm-hmm. guns. And they built giant five, now, most people hear bunkers, they hear these small concrete bunkers. Well, we're talking five-story tall bunkers, and they go 5 stories down under the ground as well. What you see with your eyes is 5 stories tall, then they go 5 stories underground. These are absolutely massive places. Now, the Normandy, the entire coast of Normandy, is very well known for its paranormal hauntings since mm-hmm. D-Day. Now, remember, over 5,000, just Americans, over 5,000 people died in under 8 hours, just on the American side. Over 8,000 within the first 8 hours. Now, that's not counting the British, the French, the Allies, or the Nazis themselves. Mm-hmm. That's just the Americans. And the paranormal activity have always been really heavy up and down the Normandy coast and in these bunkers and all over the place. However, nobody's ever bothered to explore these things. There's never been a paranormal group out there that they're aware of, certainly not in the bunkers. Well, recently they took down the 8-foot-tall fences for my team to go in on the 4th, and we're inviting the public. They have cleared the way. They have cleared the whole area to make these bunkers accessible and safe, as long as you stay on the trails, of course. And we're going to actually have access to every bunker.
You know, it's been many, 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 many years since the war, but I want to say something about that. Folks, regardless of which country you're coming from, let me explain something to you. And listen to me, okay? You may think I'm nuts, but listen to me on this. It's been a long time since 1944. And you may think, oh, well, all of the stuff that was going to explode, it's all gone now. They've swept it all. And I'm sure they've tried. But listen carefully. I was in East Timor, and we found mortar shells in someone's front yard that they had found down in the river, unexploded mortar shells, mortar rounds, Japanese, from World War II. They found them down in the river. They brought them up to their yard. They thought they were cool, and they were just hair trigger just before exploding because they were so deteriorated. And the bomb squad had to come in and take possession of them. They had to be transported out into an area where there was nobody. They dug a pit, they put them in there, and exploded them, and they did explode. So what you have to do is really pay attention when you go and listen to what your guides tell you about where to walk and where not to walk. Stay on the path.
That is such a fact. Now, on the beaches of Normandy, now we're just talking, let's take one part of the beach, Juno Beach. I got my paperwork here. 58,000 anti-personnel mines. 58,000.
Mm-hmm.
22,000 anti-tank mines. They're all sitting on that one stretch of beach. The farm fields and all the land around. Now, you still find the 800-pound bombs dropped by the Americans all over the beaches of Normandy and on the farm fields and around these bunkers. Every single day, there's one exploding. Every single day, you see the bomb squad out there. And it's been a permanent job since the war ended. They're out there every day disarming these weapons. And it's been going on, like I said, ever since the war ended. Inside these bunkers, what you'll find is, once again, those one-ton bombs, most likely down below, at the bottom of the bunkers. The machine guns could be in any room. Now, what I found when I went out there on my own, of course, I walked off the trails, which you're not really supposed to do, but I wanted to get some nice photographs of the bunker. I kept seeing these cans of beans. Now, this is wild, Kevin. I kept seeing these cans of beans here, there, everywhere, and I'm thinking, there's no campground around here, you know? Who's putting these out here? And I asked one of the gentlemen out there working, a farmer, and I said, what is with the beans? And he said, no, those are German grenades. They actually look like a can of beans with a wooden stick coming off the back end of them.
Mm-hmm.
Those were German grenades, and they are literally thousands of them. You can see with your eyes all over the place.
But if you stay on the trails that have been cleared, you're safe.
Right. Well, they have marked off sections of beach where they removed as much as they could. Of course, you know, the corrosion will rot away the explosive, but up on the farmland where these bunkers are, they're all still right. Very, very active mines.
All right, we have to take a break, and we shall return right after this.
Rebels gone, a half-remembered song. things always were just as they now appear. If there were flowers, then I doubt that any ever.
And welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening, Robert McDonald. We're talking about something that he and his group are planning for June 4th, 5th, and 6th at Normandy. And, you know, the site of the D-Day invasion. And let me ask you a question about that. You're going there. This is a paranormal event. I mean, it's an event that is being put on by your paranormal group, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes, sir.
Okay. And what is it that you hope to accomplish by being able to go into all these bunkers?
Well, there has been countless thousands of reports over the years of paranormal activity.
Such as now, what?
I guess you would call it hauntings, ghosts, shadow movements. For example, they called us out there one time because the windows were rattling in the small town Adelaide where this show's going to be. And the windows were vibrating, and they heard what could only be described as a tank battle. I had a friend of mine, a gendarme, which means a police officer over there in French. I went over to his office, and yeah, the windows were rattling. And we went out along the coast, trying to follow the sounds with our equipment, and we found tracks in the beach in the sand about, oh, I guess they were about 30 foot long. We did plaster cast of these.
What kind of tracks? Tank tracks or footprints?
Yeah, tread tracks from a tank. Mm-hmm. And we did plaster cast of them to take them to the museum the next day to be identified, and they were identified as tiger tank tracks. Now, before and after,
and those are German.
Those are German tanks used in World War II, the most mm-hmm. toughest tank on Earth. And up on the top of the hills, we were finding more tracks in the sand of, I don't know, we took a cast of them. I never tried to make any claims. We made a cast of them and took them to the museum. One turned out to be a Tiger, one turned out to be a Sherman, which was used, the Sherman tank was, of course, used most used tank by America and the British. Well, they were identified, the treads. Now, if you look in the sand of the beach to see just that short bit of treads, 12, 13 feet of treads, there's no answer for it. There's nothing in front of it but beach sand, nothing in back of it but beach sand, but then here are the prints of the treads.
And they're fresh.
They're fresh. And if you were to bring them in by, we tried every scenario. If you know, I do that. I try to debunk everything. If you bring them in by a boat, let's say in a crane, there's no way. There's too many obstacles in the water from D-Day. You could not bring a boat even near shore. In fact, it's banned anyway because the mines are still active in the ocean. We thought about, okay, if you brought it in by a truck, well, it would make probably a half foot deep, you know, marks through the sand. That's very soft sand over there. We could not find an explanation for it.
Well, you would have truck tracks as well as tank tracks.
Yeah, you would have. It would take probably 30 people as well as the truck, and mm-hmm. just to drop one tread onto the ground to make that print. Which is an awful lot of work, just for that. And
Now let me ask you: when you say that one print, you just had one track, not two parallel tracks?
We had a set of tracks.
A set of 30
foot long, about roughly. Some were 12 feet long. Some were 30 feet long. Some were longer. Mm-hmm. But they were spaced within 200 feet apart from each other. In other words, you'd see these tracks, these double tracks. They would disappear suddenly. You'd just have beach sand. Then you'd have they'd show back up again 100 feet later.
Okay, now let's back up just a moment. Mm-hmm. When you were there, you heard this battle going on?
Oh, we had it on recording. We have it on recording. It was extremely loud. Whenever you would hear this sonic boom of these, I guess you'd call it a tank battle. I can only assume what was going on. The windows of the town would shake and rattle. And they flew helicopters over, and you name it, they flew it over, and they could not find an answer. So, just with nothing, nowhere else to go, they called in my team.
It was still going on when you got there.
Yeah, it's still going on. The windows were still vibrating. My team went straight to work. We sent people on the top side, following the trails along the actual. It's called the Atlantic Wall, what the Germans built. We had somebody walking the safe trails up top. A seven-man team member. We had 12 team members down on the beach, and we just could not come up with any answers because we had our boat in the water now. The ghost ship hunters went about a half mile offshore where it's safe.
Nobody saw anything.
Now, when we were on the beach, we heard gunshot, cannon fire coming from the ocean. Now, the guys in the ghost ship hunter crew, my ship, heard the gunfire coming from the beach. Now, the guys up in the hills heard it coming from the beach, but us on the beach heard all the sounds coming from the hills. So no matter where you were, it was coming from another direction.
All right, but nobody saw anything.
Visually, no. Outside of the tracks.
Okay, but now, would that imply that the tracks were made before you got to the beach?
Well, the tide was still going out when we arrived at the beach. So the tracks had to have been made within half an hour from the time before we arrived, at the very most half an hour before we arrived. So there's no way to really explain it outside of just calling it outright paranormal.
That's weird, so man. That is really weird.
But there have been reports of paranormal activity from Juneau Beach, which is where the Americans hit the beach, all the way down to Swart, all the way over to Adeling, France, which is where our paranormal hunt's going to be. 90% of the Atlantic Wall bunkers, I mean the huge ones, 250 within a 2-mile square area, is sitting where we're going to have our ghost hunt show.
Now has anybody reported ever seeing ghost tanks out there?
Yeah, there has been photographs of, I guess you would call, I'm still trying to find a definition for it. You would call it shadow images moving on the beach. There are lots of videos of that from the people who live on the Normandy coastline.
And do those shadow images have the shape of tanks?
Yeah. You can even identify what type of tank. In fact, I have one. I took a photograph in a very famous bunker over there that's notorious. I guess you would call it urban legend since World War II. It's called Bunker 4. Now, Bunker 4 is a 5-story tall structure, sits all by itself, all alone. As far as I know, it's never had a gun connected with it. Now, as it's told, and we found the actual proof of it, the Canadians and the Americans attacked this bunker and had a 3-day battle. They surrounded this bunker, and basically whatever's in there fighting them will not get out or get away. They surrounded the bunker and had a 3-day battle. The morning of the fourth day, the bunker was silent, so they, of course, attacked it, the Americans. When our troops went inside, there was nothing there. Absolutely nothing. In fact, the Germans had never used the bunker. They never had a gun in it, nothing.
But we had a 3-day battle with...
Exactly. They dropped the subject like a hot rock, however the town remembers it forever. They remember the 3-day battle. There is no explaining that one. The U.S. government said they got away. Well, when you consider they had, there might have been 40, 50 men inside that giant bunker, but there was about 2,000 Americans surrounding it. It's hard to say they got away. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But the word was is they escaped. And that's one of the most paranormally active bunkers they have out there to this very day.
So who do you think... The Americans and Canadians, or American and British. Who was it? Americans and British?
Right. Well, the rumor was...
Who were they fighting?
Well, in this situation, you go by all the information you can gather, and we were gathering information from the locals, of course, who lived through it. The people who lived in the town, they can only share their family's memories, and we spoke to a lot of the old people who were actually there at the time. in the town. Mm-hmm. Very old guys, somewhere about 95, some of them 95 years old. Their story is unique in itself. They said this bunker was built by a set of Germans, I guess you call them engineers, to build this particular bunker. They went in the wrong way of Hitler later on, and it was said they were put up against the wall and shot inside their own bunker after its completion. You know, they are the ones who had the slaves pour the concrete, the Polish slaves, build this thing. And after it was built, they put them up against the wall and shot them, and it said they were buried in the bunker. That's the story from the town. There's nothing in the archives that denies this.
Now, you've been in this bunker, right?
I've been up to the bunker. I've been in the bunker, yes.
Is there...
I have some photographs of things I can't quite explain.
Is there any possibility that there is like a tunnel for them in the lower levels where they can get out and escape that way?
You know, that was one of the big things, but in this particular bunker, there was no way, there was no tunnels. There was nothing. Hmm. Not that anyone has found, let's put it that way, that anyone has found to this date. And they have drained water out twice. And to this moment, there's only a handful of people who could even go up to the bunker. There's still activity going on there. In fact, the town, the community, everybody stays really, really, really far away from this place. And it's just called Bunker 4 to the locals.
How many people are going to attend this Normandy Beach adventure?
Well, right now we have paranormal teams coming in from all across the United Kingdom, Scotland, Ireland, and at the moment, 33 countries. Paranormal teams from 33 countries heading there. It's more, like I said, my group is Paranormal 360. We also have many UFO hunters because there's a lot of that type activity happening along the Normandy coast at the moment. So we have a lot of those people. That's, you know, some of them connected with this bunker as well. You know, what were you fighting that isn't there? So,
see, now my dad was in World War II. Mm-hmm. And so I grew up hearing about all kinds of things about World War II. And he was a Marine. And I've heard lots of stories about Normandy, although he was in the South Pacific. He was not at Normandy. And he was in the Pacific campaigns. But I've heard lots and lots of stories about Normandy. I've read a bunch of stories about Normandy, and this is one I've never heard.
Well, there's about, we have uncovered about 44 different combat, I would call it paranormal combat stories from Operation Overlord or D-Day, mm-hmm. All the way up and down the coast. There is a, matter of fact, there is a house in Calais, France, that's just hit all the major newspapers for its paranormal activity. Chairs flying around, people actually getting injured. And that just recently hit the internet and through the newspapers of France. So it's, as we're getting closer to the anniversary of D-Day, the activity seems to be increasing. We have permanent people along the coast now, part of the team, who actually live along the coast. So it's, we're getting constant reports, stream of reports, and it's getting pretty interesting, Kevin. Some of the reports, it's now Bunker 4 is unique in itself. The UFO activity reports coming from the actual soldiers who hit that particular area, that particular beach area, and they were talking about Bunker 4 and seeing lights flying above it. I went out there in one of my investigations, and yeah, there was the French fighter jets were reporting, the Air Force was reporting a strange anomaly. They're calling ball lightning. You know, ball lightning doesn't usually chase planes. I went out there and I saw something myself camping right on the beach looking up at the sky, and I couldn't, and I saw the jet coming. It was just at sunrise. And I saw a ball of light, I guess you would say, following the jet. It literally jumped in front of the jet. Now, these jets are moving extremely fast. This isn't, you know, slow motion stuff. And this... if you want to call it ball lightning, I don't know what to call it. It was actually doing a dance around the plane, almost teasing the pilot. And this was right probably a half mile from Bunker 4. So there's a lot of activity in the area. But when you see a ball of light, I wouldn't call that paranormal, but I wouldn't know what to call it. I wouldn't actually call it a UFO either. And well, if I tried to describe
it,
this
is
object,
mysterious, whatever it is.
And yeah. And if you look at some of the film footage I took of this, it you would sound insane to try to describe it to somebody.
Have you released this film footage, like, on YouTube or anything?
Oh, I've never released film footage on YouTube my entire life. No, I haven't. I have not done that. All right,
we have to step away for a break, and we will return right after this. All right, welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. This is the Kevin Smith, and on the line with me from his home in the Netherlands, Robert MacDonald. Robert, let me ask you a question about you and this project. You're in the Netherlands, and Normandy Beach is not like, you know, just a couple of blocks down the road. It's a good distance from you. What is it that got you interested in doing this project on the anniversary of D-Day at Normandy Beach?
Right. Well, I've received well, you have to go back and explain Paranormal 360, my group. My group does not post on YouTube in particular. We do not do TV shows. That's just not us. We investigate rumors, urban legends, everything from UFO to ghosts in a 360 direction. We find out if there's anything to it, and we just let everybody else know, all the other ghost groups. Or we say, come and look for yourself. We need your help, which is this case. Mm-hmm. In the history of Normandy Beach, with so many dead, and I'm receiving so many reports from France. It is about 2 hours from my home drive time, so it's not that big of a distance. I go there all the time, actually. But when you hear these reports and you want to know, you know, is there anything to it? And you go out there and you find that there is something to it. The next question is, well, how many ghost hunters have looked into this before? Zero. You know, I'm like, what? There are paranormal teams quite literally all over Earth. By the thousands, if you look on Facebook, by the countless.
How do you know nobody has?
I checked into it. I asked all the way along the coast what paranormal groups have been here doing this, looking for ghosts throughout the bunkers. Well, nobody. How many paranormal groups have walked on the beach doing, for example, a candlelight visual telling all the fallen, that's the Germans as well as the Americans, you know, rest in a candlelight visual. You know, we remember you. We're sad you fell for your country, both sides. And, of course, there's ceremonies on D-Day itself. But other than that, they have no record of any groups when you get permits for these things. There's no record. Nobody. Okay. They have nobody ever put in for a permit to do this.
So you had to put in, you had to apply for a permit to do this, and I would suspect you applied for a permit by where, applying at the police station or?
Applied where? Through the French government.
Through the French
and
government.
And I did it through museums, uh-huh. Through several museums. You got to apply by districts, which I did.
And were they initially?
Basically, you're on your own. They just want to know you're out there.
Were they pretty open to you doing this, or did you have any obstacles? Or
actually, in this case, no obstacles, none whatsoever. In fact, I was really, really welcomed in. Mm-hmm. And bring as many as you want. Just come up with answers. That was their main thing. You know, you have to agree to share the answers because they're desperate to know something. Now, I took several photographs myself of this bunker head-on from all directions, and in one image, you actually see the image of a Tiger tank showing up in the background inside the bunker, which is kind of impossible because you have inside the bunker, directly in the door of the bunker, you have about a 20-foot drop straight to the ground where the cannon actually sat. So to see a Tiger tank equal with your eyes at the door of the bunker, it's impossible, but I actually have a photograph of that. Can't explain it, but I have it.
Well,
it's very
clear. I mean, you've got all these videos and you've got all these photographs, and you've said your group doesn't ever post on YouTube or I mean, where
my
can,
group doesn't. Now all the other groups do.
So where can people see the videos that you have? Where can they see the photographs?
We do live feeds, like for example through your show. We do live mm-hmm. feeds and let everybody see what we see at the same moment. For example, the Paranormal Knights of Scotland, uh-huh. They're going to be, they release video footage all the time. They're going to be doing that on YouTube as well. The Ghost Hunters Netherlands, a group down here I work with all the time, they're going to be releasing information also from Normandy in real time.
How can we, the Kevin Smith Show, how can we arrange or can we arrange to show your event live here?
Just the way we're doing it now. We will have a Skype camera on hand. This is a large camera, a little bit bigger than your home camera. Mm-hmm. And we can send you just a live feed straight through Skype.
Are you willing to do that?
Oh, I think it'd be a blast.
Okay.
I would set it up with my friends. We will have a satellite dish in the area on a truck, so we will be able to do that.
I'm looking forward to that, and we certainly will televise that.
And you'll be the first one in this bunker, I think it's 65 years. If there's bones in the basement, we're about to find out, Kevin.
Well,
now, these tanks, now anyone who walks on a particular part of this beach hears gunshots, hears noises. But on D-Day itself, this is coming from the French now, the French police. If you try to do a candlelight vigil on the beach, it might get quite noisy. This is what he said. And I said, okay. I'm looking forward to that one. The idea for me is to let the spirits know where they're in peace. They're remembered, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I don't exactly know why paranormal activity happens, but it could be as simple as acknowledge I'm here. And in Bunker 4's situation, I think it's still trying to do that. Acknowledge All right. our existence.
I'm going to throw an idea out. And let me ask you, because you're a paranormal investigator, I'm not. I have said on this show many, many, many times that this world has just gone nuts. It's insane. And it's like the galactic asylum here.
Yep.
I mean, everywhere you turn, people are wanting to fight. You know, you don't believe in my God? Let me kill you for that. And that is not just one group or one religion. That's several. You put your tent across the line and you're over on our property now, so let's have a war. All right. Now, here's the idea, and I want to see what you think about it. If this Normandy thing is as you say it is, and I have no reason to think it's not, that war is still going on. Now, we have been involved, we, the United States, have been involved in perpetual war since World War II. And there are people who have fought and died in many, many places, and it's happening as I speak right now in a number of places around this planet. Is it possible that by doing all these wars, we're setting off perpetual war on the other side, and that may be a little bit behind why the world has gone nuts?
Well, you know, these things I'm hearing about, these paranormal events, and once again, Kevin, this is stuff I'm hearing, and I see a lot of things I can't really explain, and I try to debunk them. Sometimes you absolutely can't. Normandy's one of those cases where there's no debunking it. It's going on, whatever it is. I think when you die, this is just an opinion. That's all it can be. When you die instantly, such as the people on Normandy Beach, they open the door of the landing craft and you die that quickly. Some of them died before they ever got out of the craft. In some cases, I really, in my heart, believe they don't know they're dead. Now, this is both the Germans and the American side. They died so instantly, they don't even know they're dead. And I think, yes, they are still fighting a war. One we can't see, but it's still going on.
But could that be part of what is behind this sort of cloud of insanity around this planet right now?
You know, there are a lot of theories on that. I'm not really very good on dimensions, but some people are saying we have cut a slice into the next dimension. We're allowing that to come in. The people past, we're allowing them into our living world. When you have the past, it's hard for me to explain, but just look back a little bit. 10 years ago, there was maybe 2 ghost hunting groups on the planet. And now there's 500,000, and everybody's getting evidence. In other words, you know, there's more than enough proof that something's going on. You know, at least for me, it's quite obvious something's going on, but what is it?
You know, what is so hard for me... And look, I've spent I spent most of my adult career as a cop, and I was not a pencil pusher. I was on the street front line, and I've also held command positions where I was in the office and hated it. But most of my career, I'm on the street front line, and you're dealing with the rowdies. You're dealing with people who have been involved or are involved in hurting other people. And some of that's physical and some of it is not, but they're involved in doing things that are harmful to other people. And so I've spent my life around all of that. I cannot imagine somebody wanting to hurt somebody. I guess you would think, well, you ought to be used to it by now. I am used to it. I don't understand it. All right, we have to take a break, and we'll be back. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show, and my guest this evening, Robert McDonald. For those of you joining us just now in this second hour, welcome. I'm glad you're here. My sincere sympathy to you for whatever it is that kept you away from the first hour, and my sincere hopes, wishes, prayers, and dreams that you never suffer such trauma again. Robert McDonald and I are talking about an event, a paranormal event that is planned. I'm not talking about a paranormal incident here, but a paranormal event that is planned for June the 4th, 5th, and 6th. June 6th, of course, being the anniversary of D-Day. And this is being planned for the Normandy beaches and where D-Day took place. As we went away for break, Robert, I was saying, you know, I've been around violence, and I've been around, and I'm talking about extreme violence. I've been around that a lot, and I've been around other types of criminal activity where someone is hurting someone in some way a lot, most of my adult life. And I cannot imagine somebody wanting to hurt somebody. I made the statement. Some people may say, well, you've been a cop all those years. You ought to be used to it by now. Used to it, yes. Understand it? No. I don't understand why anybody would want to hurt somebody. And yet, we live in a world where there is a significant portion of the Earth's population who think that it's somehow a good thing if you can hurt somebody and show what a badass you are. You know, I don't want to. And, I mean, if I have to defend myself, I can do that. But I don't want to hurt anybody. And this is the type of insanity that I'm talking about, the cloud of insanity that's around this planet that thinks it's somehow a virtue if you can prove that you're, you know, the baddest ass in the valley. And, you know, if you are, you don't need to prove it.
Yep, there's a lot of that going on. But remember now, the people who built the Atlantic Wall, being the Nazi Party, killed countless millions of Jews.
And
used
others.
Them as slave to build these bunkers.
Yeah, not
they
but
killed
listen,
them right in front of the bunkers.
Not just Jews. Countless numbers of Jews, but not just Jews. And that's part of the story that gets lost sometimes.
Right, this is the ultimate hate group we're dealing with.
Yes, anybody that opposed them wound up getting that same treatment.
Now, some of the most unique information coming in, just, you know, as we're getting closer to this event, some of the unique information about some of the bunkers, they don't know exactly which one, but some of the bunkers around us, is Adolf Hitler was, as the story goes, he was doing, I guess you would call it UFO experiments, flying UFOs, and he was doing it quite successfully in the area, so the town speaks of it, and they have photographs of these flying machines, which Hitler had created. Of course, they're not alien created. Hitler created them, mm-hmm. his party. However, it said he got the knowledge from a downed craft. He got the knowledge from somebody. And he had these people in prison in a bunker. Now, what I found interesting, you know, you could easily dismiss that, but what I found interesting about the story is Bunker 4, the one we're going into, never had a gun. It was never meant for war. Why build a five-story building, five stories deep, five stories above the ground, that was not meant for war? This is very interesting in itself. And Bunker 4 is where the most activity comes from. And, you know, everything, activity, when you take the French people, activity in a small town doesn't necessarily mean ghosts. It means unexplained lights, unexplained movement, unexplained shadows.
Let me ask you a question though about let me ask you a question about Bunker 4.
Mm-hmm.
You've been in it. Is there?
I've been to it. Yeah.
You haven't been inside.
Yeah, I walked inside the door, but that was about it.
Did you see any floor that is slanted in one direction or another?
Yeah, I sure did. Straight inside the opening where the cannon should sit. It's hard to describe this bunker. You walk in, it's a absolutely huge building. And there's about five doors leading into five different chambers. And then you have a lower level. You have everything from crashed in elevators to what have you. The gun floor is normally always level. Considering this bunker had never fired a gun, there was no reason for the floor to be unlevel. It was like it was created at an angle.
And it's concrete?
But it was created at the wrong angle. In my opinion, if you put a gun there, it would never hit a target.
Is there a drain in the floor?
I saw there's a lot of tubes, but they're not what you would consider normal drains. These are giant metal openings, almost like pipes going downwards.
I bet you that's a torture chamber.
Don't know.
Torture cells and torture chambers are very often built with a slanted floor that slants towards a drain, an opening in the floor. So they, when they get through, you know, they can just hose it down and wash the blood away.
Well, that's exactly what I thought at first. If it was to rain in here, it would wash everything down that drain.
Mm-hmm.
But
I have stood in those, and It is eerie. I think our audience has heard me talk about being in a place under what used to be a Serbian, the Serbian version of KGB, and it was under their Kosovo headquarters. It was in the basement, and they've heard me tell the story about a black dog that suddenly was there, a big black German Shepherd. And he suddenly was there. Now, there's a door for the entrance down into this and a door for the exit, and that's it. Okay, you come in one, you go out the other one. And he turned and ran up the steps. I put my hand on my gun because I thought I was about to be attacked. And he turned and turned to, I guess it would be his left, that put him in a short hallway that led to the steps to the exit door. And when I peeked in there, he was gone. When I went up and went out the exit door, I asked the cops that were standing in the hallway, you know, did you guys see a dog? And they said, a dog? I said, yeah, big black dog. Did a big black dog just come out of here? And they looked at me like I was nuts because that door is locked unless you physically turn the little latch on it and unlock it and go out, and then it relocks automatically. Mm-hmm. Well, that's where I saw, down there is where I saw what I'm talking about, where the floors are slanted towards a drain.
Right.
And they, you know, there were cells down there where the floors were slanted, but there was a room where the floor was slanted towards a drain. And that's the interrogation room. So that's why I asked that question.
Well, you know, when I went in there more on the, well, neutral. I was more like, are there ghosts here? Is this a UFO? My first time in the place, it's mm-hmm. like, what is this? You know, what is the stories behind all this? What's causing it? And when you go in there and you see graffiti art from the Nazis making fun of Churchill, you see a lot of that. I took a lot of photographs of this original art from World War II, and then you see like a series of flying saucers in a photograph above a Nazi emblem, and you wonder then what the bunker is for, because the opening where the cannon should sit is so large, Kevin. It's about, I don't know, 50 feet across, 50 feet tall. The opening is just as open as tall as the building is.
So these maybe this was a place they launched them from.
That's the curiosity. They knew out there they were doing the experiments with these UFOs out there. Whether it's real UFOs, I can't say, or whether the Nazis created these UFOs, I can only assume the Nazis were creating them from the photographs that there are in black and white from that area. This is where they were doing those experiments. The town said they had captured a UFO, and there was enough witnesses to that in the town still alive. And where the Nazis took it, took these UFO, took these whatever, crashed through the town towards these bunkers. Now, it said the bunker was built just for these crafts, I guess you would call them, for these things they built, which makes no sense. Why would you build a giant bunker for these spaceships that may or may not work if you created them yourself, you know?
So, well, it put them close to the enemy.
Well, the bunkers were actually, you know, you're building this huge structure with bomb-proof walls that are going back 12 foot thick of nothing but solid reinforced concrete. That's the size of these bunkers, five stories down, and no guns, no gun emplacements, no guns at all. It made no sense. And then when you hear the story of a famous three-day battle that's actually on American record, a three-day battle where you battled nothing, it does make you wonder, doesn't it, Kevin?
Well, it does.
Were they fighting an energy, or were they fighting human beings?
Let me invite our audience to join our conversation. And you do that, folks, by giving us a call at 623-444-5889. 623-444-5889. If you have a question or a comment, we would love to hear from you. And if you are not in the USA and you're not in Canada, you can call that number. It will work from anywhere in the world, but we know it can be expensive to make those international calls. And so we have an additional option for you. If you're outside the USA, outside of Canada, there is an additional option. It's called the Flash Message. And you can send me a Flash Message by going to my website. On my website, scroll down and you'll see the picture about tonight's show. Right above that picture is the link. And you just click that and send me the Flash Message with your comment or question. The reason it's called a Flash Message is because I get a little notice flashing on my monitor over, let me get my hand where you can see it, those who are watching. Over there, I have a monitor. I have several monitors in front of me, but that one, it starts flashing and I see it. And so then I know we've got a message in. So give us a call, 623-444-5889, or if you're outside the USA and outside of Canada, you can call us or use the Flash Message. Robert, how come with all these years that have passed since the actual D-Day, with all these years that have passed, how come we don't hear anything about all of this paranormal activity happening there?
Well, there's no paranormal groups. Once again, I'll just rephrase it. There's no paranormal groups have been in the area. And so there's nothing to report other than the town. I mean, nobody has been interviewing the town folks along the Normandy Beach. If you type in this on the, I would suppose, Google, you might get one or two stories. Normandy Beach Ghost, you might get one or two stories. You certainly get some photographs from the locals of strange shadow objects, obviously soldiers from the shapes of them. You get it more from locals, but no paranormal groups have gone out there, and maybe for good reason. We're about to find out, I guess.
All right. Let's go to the telephone. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Kevin, this is Brent from Wyoming.
Hello, Brent.
Hi, Brent.
Robert, I'm going to ask what you think of this possibility. Mm-hmm. The planet has a memory, and it's replaying one of the planet's worst battles.
Right. Well, that's one of the theories we have for what a ghost ship is. I have my own theory on that. You know, of course, a ship, an object, does not have a soul. How can it haunt? One of my theories is sand, which is silicon, which makes all the memory in your computer right now. Sand can capture an image, capture an event, and hold it. And it's like hitting a replay button in time. You're seeing, this is one of our theories. Are you seeing a ghost ship or are you seeing a replay of something that happened in the past? Well, naturally, if you're watching a replay, it can't hurt you. And that's a theory of what's going on at Normandy Beach. And that's a very plausible theory, and I really enjoy that. But a replay image doesn't leave tank tracks in the sand. It does not have light flashes that hurt people, big sudden flashes. And it certainly doesn't make tanks. Well, you could hear the sound on a replay, but it certainly wouldn't make windows shake, in my opinion, not a replay. So
the replays we understand.
Right, as we understand it. Cutting into another dimension, I can see that one. I can see that as a reality, but I don't know enough about other dimensions to say this is what's happening. Still under investigation, of course. And once again, we are the first team to hit the beaches there. So.
Well, good luck.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you for the call. 623-444-5889. Folks, what do you think is happening on Normandy Beach? You've heard what Robert's been talking about. What do you think is going on? Is this a replay being replayed by the memory and the sand? Are these actual spirits? Is this something leaking over from another dimension? And I know that a number of you do think about these things because you have called from time to time and we've talked about them. I don't have an opinion on it, Robert. Let me say again, the telephone number is 623-444-5889. If you've never called us before, now's a good time because all lines are open.
I'm agreeing with you, Kevin. I can't have an opinion until the actual investigation, but I've been out there enough to know something is going on. And one of the latest theories came from a teenager who said, could it be actual aliens trying to scare you away from the beach, scare you away from these locations because they are there? Well, that's also very plausible if you believe in that.
But you know, my problem with that is if it were aliens, all they would have to do is make themselves invisible, which apparently they can, or they can, you know, just fly over and do some flashes of light and scare the devil out of you. Resorting to a replay of a battle doesn't seem to me to be the kind of thing that aliens would resort to.
Exactly. Well, I'm looking forward to the investigation and what it is these people are experiencing over there on the Normandy beaches. And since we're the first in, I really can't give any explanation to any of this until I actually experience it for myself with the group.
Yeah, let's assume it's a replay, okay? Mm-hmm. So there's no actual spirits involved.
Right.
Okay, so it's just a replay.
And you know, Kevin, that could be 90% of what ghost hunters see at the moment. That's a possibility, too.
Yeah, okay, so you get out there to do your vigil and you tell them be at rest. It should have absolutely no effect on them.
Exactly. But it sure would make us feel better. With so many Americans that died there, giving respect to them, or at least, at the very least, remembering them on the beaches. Now, most of the vigils are done from the graveyards. You've seen that on TV. Must be every single year with Tom Hanks and everybody. But this is the first one planned for the beaches. And this is where they died. They died right on those beaches. And, you know, whether or not it works, like I said, it certainly makes us feel better, giving our respects. At least we know we did that much. Coming up with answers, well, that takes a whole lot of paranormal teams, a lot more than just mine. It takes a whole lot of people. So that's why we're bringing them all in now to see what answers we can come up with.
How would you be able to determine? Now, you want to come up with answers, okay? So how would you be able to determine if this is a memory?
Well, when you have so many people out there with so much equipment, you know, the modern day electronic equipment, EVPs, voice, to hear ghost voices, I guess is what it does, EVPs ghost hunters use, and you have video equipment, cell phones going with infrared going on where you see black images moving. You can actually photograph a soldier walking down the beach if he's even cold as ice. You can,
okay, but if there's a battle going on and it's rattling the windows in town, you're going to get that on your recording. How would you be able to determine?
You'll get that on the recording, but you should also get it on your infrared.
Yeah, but how would you be able to say, okay, that's not spirits?
When you get it on your infrared camera, see a tank moving across the beach, and you can't see it with your eyes, but you see it through the camera, and you have three cameras looking in the same direction. Well, that tells you something.
What does it tell you?
Well, a tank can't be a ghost. A tank doesn't have a soul, does it? It's an image.
Okay.
Just like my theory on ghost ships, when you see an image, well, they don't have a soul. A boat doesn't go to heaven, if you look at it in that way. A tank doesn't go to heaven. So there's your answer. If you actually can video a tank moving across a field in infrared or in any spectrum, then in my opinion, what else can it be but another dimension? It can't be a human.
Okay, but it could be the sand playing back a memory and not another dimension.
That's, well, right. It would be a playback.
Mm-hmm.
Could be.
And you made a good point about the sand, because sand is silica.
Exactly.
And that is what is used to make all the memory chips for computers. And so why couldn't sand, and there's a lot of it there on the beach.
And
why,
it would be, it would also be the concrete that constructs your house. You know, people say they see ghost images and haunting inside these old castles and houses. Well, what was the concrete mixed with? You see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Are we looking at ghosts? Or are we looking at images, playbacks? This is very fascinating. Of course, a playback image won't talk to you on an EVP, a voice recorder. So, you know, this is interesting stuff now when you get ghost hunters out there and lots of teams of paranormal people to come up with answers. You will get the answers when you come up, when you have more than five professional teams, you will come up with an answer. What the answer is, I don't know. But we're certainly going to find out. We're going to be the first team in. We're going to be there for 4 days. We're going to find out the answers.
Well, help me out here, folks. We are in waters in which I do not normally swim, and I cannot think of your questions. So you're going to have to help me out. Some of you know a great deal more about this sort of thing than I do, and I need you to call and ask your questions, because there's no way I can ask your questions. I don't have your knowledge, and therefore I don't have your questions. 623-444-5889. Does any of this terrify any of the people involved? I mean, any of the ghost hunters? I mean, any of them, are they expressing apprehension about all of this?
Me.
You?
I keep a good pair of running shoes, Kevin. I'm no fool.
Be a shame to be taken down by a ghost bullet, wouldn't it?
I'm serious.
Yeah. All right, let me go to the telephone. Caller, can you hang on through this break?
Yeah.
Okay, you hang on. And Robert, we have a break that is just about to take over. So we will step away for the break, and when we come back, we'll continue. And caller, you'll be first up after the break. 623-444-5889. That's the number, ladies and gentlemen. Pick up your telephone, ask your questions, throw me a lifeline here, because I am in waters over my head when we start talking about something like this. All right. Don't go away. We will return.
We'll be right back.
Well, it did that to me a couple of nights ago. I don't know why, but the automation software just exited and skipped, and here we are. Welcome back. It's always something, it's always fun. All right. Let's go to the telephone. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Thank you for holding, and if you will, tell us your first name and from where are you calling.
Yeah, this is Rusty from Michigan.
Hi, Rusty.
Hi, Rusty.
Hi, Robert. So, you don't want to come out and say it's of alien, nature of what's making the sounds on the beach. What is your gut feeling that it is then?
Well, I try not to have a gut feeling when I go out there, but in this case, it's a cross between the two from what I'm looking at. They're right. There is activity going on. It's definitely happening. Paranormal, is it ghosts? I mean, most people don't hear ghosts loudly without some sort of a, they say you can't hear the voice. That's why they use these recorders, the modern day ghost hunters. But these are very loud noises. They're obviously real. And they're coming from no particular direction. If you're at sea, they're coming from land. And if you're on the land, they're coming from sea and in the hills. I mean, you hear gunfire as well. Who knows? I mean, I really don't have an answer, which is why we're doing this with so many teams. We want answers, and that's why we're going out there in mass.
So do you think that possibly these type of hauntings may be happening where all big battles took place?
That's the way it's looking right now. Or something is using these big battles to scare us away from these places.
Well, Rusty, we've got a lot of stories about Civil War battlegrounds where people will hear troops moving. Sometimes they hear gunfire. They hear the battle. Sometimes they hear soldiers screaming as they get hit. At various of the Civil War battlegrounds right here in the United States.
Now, right. In Gettysburg, Kevin, now that you mentioned that, in Gettysburg, I went on an investigation there, and you could actually smell the powder in the air and the fog. You could smell the gunpowder that they used in the old times,
mm-hmm.
which is, I mean, is that just coming up from the ground, from the old times? You know, so much powder in the ground from these battles, or, again, is it paranormal?
Well, if it's gunpowder in the ground, don't ever throw a cigarette down.
That's it. But we also heard sword fighting going off in the fog in the distance. I mean, a whole lot of it, not just one or two swords, but a whole lot of it. And the sounds of like 100 men running. But what is that? In my opinion, it's a replay. It's Mother Nature. We're learning more about Mother Nature every day, aren't we?
Yeah.
Global warming and everything.
So what do you think about it, Rusty?
Well, I think it must have something to do with those who have passed on, but what I would be more concerned about is the reason why they're still there, I guess.
So you think it's not just a replay, but it's actual spirits that are still there?
That is a possibility, Kevin. When you have 5,000 people that died in under 3 hours, 8,000 Americans died in under 8 hours, that's just the Americans. Up in the hill, you had almost 40,000 Germans die, and that's just one beach. That's just Utah Beach. That's not the entire Normandy coast. This was going on up and down the Normandy coast at the same moment. There's no real count on exactly how many died in that eight-hour period.
Okay, so Rusty, do you think that it's spirits or a replay?
I would think it'd be more spirit myself.
Okay, so now what about the tanks and the tank tracks left in the sand? I think Robert makes a good point that a tank is not spirit.
Well, I don't know. Without actually being there, and I mean, are those tracks being made all the time, or are they just the one set that was the day before you went?
No, they've counted them every other night along the coast.
And,
well,
and
then when
But those were not made the day before. Hang on, Rusty. Those were not made the day before he went. Those were made within minutes before he got to the beach.
Yeah, so what I'm saying is tracks are something that you could see being made. So if the people there at that bunker where the tracks were, they said they heard it up in the mountains, and the people in the mountains heard it down there, but still, you could see a physical track being made.
Well, it was dark when we were there. We walked up on the tracks using our lamps. We walked up on the tracks. They were already there, but the tide was about maybe 3 feet going outwards, which means the tracks had to have made just before we walked up on them. That's the only answer. The tide would surely flatten the sand.
You don't think that those tracks may have been older and just have been preserved?
Impossible. Impossible. If you know the sand out there, that's why the Americans had so much trouble hitting that beach. When you walk onto the sand, you sink pretty much way beyond your ankles. It's very soft sand. So
I think you're headed in the right direction. I like the idea of, you know, just open mind about it, but then try to disprove it. And if you can't, I don't know. I guess that
well, that's what we did.
Anything.
You know, when we had to pour plaster cast six different times on one track just to get a print, because every time we would pour the plaster into the track, it would dissolve. It would go flat again, the sand. Any type of water touching it, it would go flat. So,
why is that?
Yeah, I mean,
because it's sand. You go to a beach and build a sandcastle, and then watch the tide come in. See what happens to your sandcastle. It goes flat.
Right. Okay.
Well, there's I try not to come up with an answer by myself. That's the wrong way to go. But if you bring in up to 1,000 people at one time with all this professional equipment, you're going to get an answer. You might even get a video of the tracks as they're being made. So this is going to be an interesting time.
If it is spirits that are left over and they keep reliving that battle, seems like it, I guess I would say they're just reliving it all the time. That'd be kind of like torture.
Exactly. The idea of the vigil, the candlelight vigil, is to attempt to set them free or give them some peace. Remember, as I said earlier in the show, when you die instantly, you don't know you're dead. When it happens instant, I mean, do you know you're dead? Maybe all these people aren't even aware they're dead. They're still, what are they doing then? They're still doing their job. They're still driving the tanks. They're still running up on the beaches. The war is endless.
I had someone say to me the other day, and I think it was on this show, I think it was a caller who said, we may all, everybody on this planet may be dead and just don't know it.
That's right. That's right.
What do you think, Rusty? Are we dead?
Well, there's a lot of things we're awful stupid about, that's for sure.
If we're not dead, we are dumb. Yeah, if we're not dead, we are dumb. Right. Well, we are about some things. Yes, we are. Rusty, thank you for the call, man. You got another question or a comment?
No, that's it.
All right, thanks for the call. Very interesting.
You know, Kevin, I heard somebody say that if you're bad, you're going to go to hell, but you know, it could be we're living in hell, and when we die, we go to heaven. That's one.
Well, I don't think we're living in hell, but who knows? You know,
I don't. I see the postings from the White House. I'm beginning to wonder.
All right, we have a flash message from David in Australia. He says, "Hi, Kevin. I think some of this activity may be some of the things the Nazis were testing that are still operating, maybe hidden in the area."
That's a very good possibility, Kevin. If they have something to scare, wanting to scare off the enemy.
Yeah.
That could explain these bunkers. Once again, they were doing the UFO testing out there.
Well, not only that, they were, you know, they were really into a lot of psychic, occult side of psychic stuff.
Oh, they went all over the world to get that information.
Yeah, and so maybe they have like some psychic technology or psychotronic technology that's still operating in some way and may be hidden in the lower parts of some of these bunkers.
You know, that's something the U.S. government and the Russian government and Chinese government are still working on today. I was reading something yesterday on that sound. They can play sound and you will see an image. A certain sound wave, I guess it is, and you can see an image in your head.
And I'll tell you something. They can transmit a voice right into your head, and you will hear it, and people around you won't.
Well, when you think about how fast America invaded that beach, now think about it, in under 8 hours, there's no way the Nazis could have disassembled something like that quick enough if it was sitting on those beaches. That means that, yeah, it could be in one of those bombed out bunkers still operating. That's a very, very realistic possibility.
Wow. Wow. So what if you walk up on the, you know, the little black box down there under the bunker, and it unleashes on you, you know, visions of demons eating you alive?
Exactly.
Yeah, well, exactly. What are you going to do?
Well, I think most of the ghost hunters I'm aware of will go straight for it. I think they'll walk out with the box if such a thing does exist. I'm with some pretty brave guys that are going in there, going with me. The Scots, well, even in World War II, the Germans were afraid of the fighting Scots. They were scared to death of them. They called them the devil dogs, the Germans did. Because if you threw a shell at them, they would throw 50 at you. If you killed one of the Scots, they would kill 10 of yours. And the Germans were aware of that. They tried to avoid the Scots at all costs. So this is, you know, I got some pretty tough guys going in there with me.
Well, I'm a pretty tough guy, but I'll tell you something. If it's something that's non-physical, I'm not equipped to, I'm not equipped to do battle with a psychotronic image. I'm not equipped to do battle with a ghost, you know.
Well, you know, I would run from a ghost quicker than I would from a video machine. So if it is some type of device, I'm not going to run from a device. I would probably run at it, just my own curiosity. That's kind of an interesting point that you guys brought up. It could be that. Why not?
That's why I asked people to call in, because that didn't even cross my mind.
Well, this really is good. I wrote it down because that's something I never considered. There's equipment that can identify this, so I had never considered bringing that with me. So I'm glad he called in.
Well, and that's why I asked the listeners to participate, because we've got some really good minds out there sitting between a couple of ears listening to the show, and they bring up some really good points. And
he might have cured the whole problem. I mean, we'll see.
But, you know, if it is that, you ought to be able to pick up some electronic fields from it.
I have the equipment at hand to do that, so I had never thought about taking it, but this is good. I use it in ghost ship hunting. So this is good.
I wish I had time to do it. I would write you a theme song for your adventure.
We need to get you out there on the beach, Kevin.
No, you don't. No, you don't.
Well, I have some friends, once again, the Scottish Knights, who are going out there with me, some of these boys from Scotland, some of the guys from Ireland. I'd like to do your show again before D-Day. That would be fun.
Yeah, well, we'll do it without me being on the beach, though, okay?
up to you.
Okay. Caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name, and from where are you calling?
Kevin, this is Jerome from Pennsylvania.
Hello, Jerome.
Hi, Jerome.
Hi. Hi. Normally I'm not too interested in ghosts and stuff, but I find myself interested in that these bunkers are so large, and this was Fortress Atlantic, from what I understand, and I don't think you would hide something in some place that you thought might be invaded. I think you would have more of a defensive weapon, like a huge cannon or something.
Well, they were along the wall.
Well, you know, they had offensive weapons stationed for defensive purposes all along that wall. They did have tanks. They had cannons. They had heavy artillery all along that wall and further back. Jerome, can you hang on during this break?
Sure, Kevin.
Yeah, hang on. All right, folks, we're going to step away for a break, and we will be back right after this. We'll be right back. All right, welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. We're on Final Approach. That means we have just a few minutes left in tonight's show. And on the telephone with me is Jerome from Pennsylvania. You still with us, Jerome?
Yes, I am, Kevin.
And we have Robert McDonald from the Netherlands. You still with me, Robert?
Still here.
Hey, we're still in the air then. All right, Jerome, we kind of had to cut everything off, and so the mic is yours.
You know what, Kevin, and Mr. McDonald, I talking about Gettysburg, I see the ghost, I hear about ghosts, and people will be walking in the field, and they'll actually see soldiers charge them on horses and stuff, and obviously they got guns with them and stuff, but there's no real physical evidence or anything. But what I found interesting on what you're talking about is the tank tracks that are actually forming in the sand.
That is weird.
That's beyond weird.
That is weird. You make a good point. I have not heard of that before. Have you, Jerome?
No, that's what I'm saying. This is really, this part was very interesting to me, and if you could get that on film to actually see it manifesting, that's very interesting. And furthermore, like I said, I'm not really interested in ghosts or anything like that, but I know in my living room, my dog will be sitting up on the couch, and he'll be looking at something in the corner, and you can tell that he's actually intent on, he's not just daydreaming, he's looking at something. And my wife and I, we just figured that whatever it is, it's positive and not negative.
Have you, Robert, Jerome, you've brought up a good point. Dogs, cats, house pets of various types do exhibit the ability to see things that we don't see. Have you thought about part of your paranormal investigation just having some people with dogs on a leash? Are you there, Robert?
Yeah, I'm here. My team uses all sorts of creatures, little mouses, dogs. We use cats. My team. Most ghost hunting teams do not. However, my team certainly do, walking on those beaches, absolutely, because we can let a dog loose. Now, these beaches, if to get an understanding of how the people in Normandy behave on them, they're gone. The beaches at night are empty. They don't walk on the beaches at night. They barely walk on them in the daytime. On the hottest days of the summer, they'll walk down particular trails and lay on certain portions of the beaches. Once again, that's the landmine thing. You don't know where they are. And on a beach, you never know where they are.
Mm-hmm.
So we use dogs. If something, at least I do, when something, you think you see something, you think you hear something, certainly you hear a tank, you let a dog go. They can hear things we don't hear. They can see things we don't see. And once again, these dogs and animals could be reacting to the playback image. Because if you watch a dog, he'll stare at a TV, and a dog see two-dimensional, not three. They don't see what we see with a TV. But if you see, I've seen my pet just staring at a TV that's off. I find that interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes even barking at the TV that's off.
Maybe because he wants you to turn it on.
Possibly.
Yeah.
But I have my theory that animals, yeah, they're very perceptive to this. But then again, that hits on my theory of playback. Are all these, now think about the whole world now with all these ghost teams are getting lots of real information on all these electronical machines. But are they picking up, that's still my question. Are they picking up ghosts, or are a big percentage of them picking up a playback? It's a nice big question mark for me.
All right, Jerome, I have a question for you, and you'll have to answer pretty quick. Let's say it's playback. That means that the Earth is recording events and playing them back for us if it's a playback. Let's assume it is. Is it not possible that we are loading Earth's hard drive with insanity to play back to us, and we are thus, by our own violence, creating a Mad Max world in which we will have to live?
No, I don't think so.
No?
I think that crystals, which is, you know, the sand is crystals, have a way of containing consciousness, and you're getting this playback, just like the stranger in the Pentagon. Remember, he opened a book, and you could open this book and read and follow it along, but once you shut it, once you opened it again, you started at page one.
Yeah, but if we are loading, if it's playing back, it's playing back things we did. And if we continue to load it with violent stuff, then we're going to get more and more playbacks of more and more violence, aren't we?
Speaking of this,
I see where you're going on that. Sure. I think anything we do, both positive and negative, is being recorded somewhere, and will come back to us.
Now, on your overload theory, Kevin, one of my team members. Once again, we don't use all this high-tech equipment. We just go in there.
We have two minutes. Two minutes.
Okay. One of my team member truly believes that this is a warning. The playbacks are a warning of the overload. Now that you mention that.
Yeah, I think I'm not saying I think that's what it is. I'm saying I think that's a possibility.
Of course.
But Jerome, I want to thank you for the call, man.
Thank you, Kevin, and thank you, Mr. McDonald.
Oh, yeah, bye-bye. You give me a lot to think about. I'm glad you called in.
Yeah, very, very interesting. Okay, let me check one more time our flash message board to make sure I didn't miss anybody. I did not miss anybody. Okay, and let me say to David, thank you for that flash message that you sent. Okay, so this is going to happen June 4th, 5th, and 6th. Does everybody just sort of ooze to the beach, or does everybody meet up somewhere?
We have it pretty well organized. We're all going to meet at the museum in Adelaide, France, and we'll start from there. There's a huge campground just about 200 meters away from the museum itself, the Nazi museum. It's called a World War II museum, but it's mostly Nazi equipment that was recovered from these bunkers. We'll start at that point, and then I'll be escorting them to all the different locations. And we have been given the green light to all the locations. They took down the giant fences around these bunkers. They'll be taking them down on the 3rd in lieu of our investigations, and they'll go right back up on the 7th, the giant fences that keep people out.
Mm-hmm.
We'll be pretty much on our own.
Will you have any police with you?
We're on our own.
Completely on your own.
There's nothing out there but the bunkers themselves. The government will take down the fences, and they're ours. I have been out there and rehearsed it many times. I know exactly which trails to walk the people on, the investigation teams. We'll separate them. We'll separate the teams into different groups going in different locations. We have about 40 miles to cover altogether each night. So we'll be sending the groups, one group to the beach, maybe seven groups to the beach in seven different directions, seven groups on the hill at the very same moment. We'll be loading up our boats in Calais. We have 9 boats that'll be about 1 mile offshore with the safe distance. And we'll have about 9 boats out there floating during this event.
And what will the boats be doing? Well, you know what? I wish I had time for an answer, but we don't. Because we're out of time. Thanks for being with us, and if you will, stay on the line with me a moment as we bring this in for a landing, because we are 15 seconds away from the end here. Ladies and gentlemen, Robert McDonald, fascinating story that lots of fascinating stuff I've never heard about Normandy or Normandy Beach. And, you know, that 3-day battle, that's one of them. Wow. With what did they battle? All right, that's going to do it for this evening. My friends call me Steel Eye. My enemies do too. You may call me whatever you wish to call me. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time, so long, everybody.